Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Well, we haven't played them since then, so, you know, I haven't really studied them, but, you know, we'll take a close look at them. But, I mean, it just looks like about what I thought it would look like. I mean, he's a quality player. The 49ers gave him a contract that, you know, reflected their confidence in him going forward to lead their team. Won the NFC Championship last year behind him, so I think that all speaks for itself.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Belichick on Jimmy Garoppolo. It's Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game, taking you up to noon and the kickoff show with Bonte and Shasky. So many subplots to this one, John Dickinson. We have, of course, Belichick versus Kyle Shanahan. Actually, I mean, Belichick versus the Shanahans, right? We have the Patriots trying to avoid their inevitable demise. At some point, the Patriots are going to have a losing season again. That could be this year. They're trying to avoid that. And, of course, we have Jimmy Garoppolo back to New England. I think there are many more important stories in terms of how they're going to impact the game than Jimmy Garoppolo back to New England. But that's the big story. And today, JD, we have from Jason Lockin for CBS Sports something that resembles breaking news. But if it's true, is it really anything that we didn't know? CBS Sports' Jason LaCanfora, citing multiple league and team sources, reporting this morning that the 49ers are, quote, very much keeping their options open, end quoted, quarterback. It could go in a few different directions, and it is possible he's not the guy next year. That's fair, a source with knowledge of the situation told Jason LaCanfora. I don't think that's lost on anybody. And LaCanfora points out that two quarterbacks who have played for Shanahan, Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, could become free agents this offseason. Shanahan himself said the 49ers passed on Patrick Mahomes, at least in part, in 2017, because they thought they might be able to sign Cousins as a free agent the following season. So what do we have there? Jason LaCanfora today says, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo's 49er future is still open beyond this year. Is that anything that we really didn't know already?
Look, to me, Whitey, if there, and you can correct me if you think I'm off base here, the one thing that is clear to me is that Jimmy Garoppolo's future with the 49ers is unclear. Like, I think that's 100% fair or unfair. It's an accurate statement. And, you know, how well he plays and how the rest of this season plays out is going to be a factor in determining his future. And look, I'm always reluctant, you know, to go too far down that road. But I do think it's safe to say what happens between now and the end of the season is going to be the decider in this thing one way or another. Now, look, does that mean that the 49ers are definitely going to go get a different quarterback? No, but does it mean that they're going to look at Matt Ryan or Kirk Cousins? I think they definitely would look at both of those guys and then maybe make a determination as to if Garoppolo's a better fit, you know, to continue to move forward. But I do think it's absolutely going to be something that's on the table unless the 49ers, you know, can gather their season, get into the playoffs, you know, maybe even win a playoff game, but just get into the playoffs at a minimum and have Jimmy Garoppolo play really well down the stretch to lead them to the playoffs. I think if he does that, a lot of this conversation is quelled. But if he doesn't, I think it's only going to be, you know, opening the door further to continue to speculate.
Yeah, there you go. I believe that's now 19 times today. 19 times I've been in total agreement with you. I totally agree with you. The reason I roll my eyes at this report to a degree is that, well, I don't think this is anything that we didn't already know. If you were paying attention to this situation, we knew that it could go in a few different directions. I still think it's most likely that he stays, but we really don't know. And, of course, the beauty of the situation for the 49ers is that they have some flexibility here. Whether they will choose to exercise that, we'll see. Garoppolo not owed any guaranteed money in the final 2 years of his deal after this year, and the 49ers would carry only $1.4 million in dead cap if he is traded or cut after June 1st. It's NBCSportsBayArea.com points out. Jimmy Garoppolo, I think it's just as likely that he plays well through the rest of the season, whether the 49ers make the playoffs or not. And it's going to be an easy call for the 49ers at that point to say, you know what, we're better off with this guy. But we'll see. What do you think of the notion? I know we touched on this, JD. They're talking about this in Boston in the New England area this week that, hey, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo returns to New England next year. You think Belichick would be up for that?
If he's not a 49er, I think the most likely landing spot is that he winds up being up with the Patriots. I think Belichick would love to have him back. I think Belichick thinks he could win with him. And I would even go as far as to say, and I don't mean this to sound like an indictment of Kyle Shanahan and his, you know, but it's going to sound that way. I feel like Bill Belichick believes he can win at a greater level more consistently with Jimmy Garoppolo than maybe Kyle Shanahan does. And that, again, not to say that he doesn't think he can win with Jimmy Garoppolo, but I just think there's a confidence level that Belichick, from drafting him to coaching him, you know, coming up the first couple of years behind Tom Brady, there's a confidence level in his skill set and ability, I think, that maybe wanes in different situations with Kyle Shanahan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just look at it this way. Let's assume that's true. And again, I agree with you. If you're Belichick and you're looking at this game and you're thinking, man, I'd love to have him back. Well, why would they decide they want to move off of him? Well, maybe if I make Garoppolo look so bad today, that's certainly going to increase my chances of getting a Jimmy Garoppolo next year. Whether he'll be able to do that, obviously it's not that simple. But Bill Belichick has a lot of success coaching against quarterbacks that he drafted or started at some point. I believe he's 7-1 against quarterbacks that he either drafted or started at some point. I mentioned this earlier, Scott Zolak, who is a Patriots radio analyst and, of course, used to play quarterback in the NFL. He says, look at the stuff down in Miami with Ryan Fitzpatrick. So much of this specific position based on timing. For me, the way this season is starting to play and the way things have played out for Garoppolo, they haven't developed him as a downfield passer. What's that big delay? Like, what are you afraid of? So there are some people in New England that think there are already indications that Kyle Shanahan is not totally satisfied with Garoppolo. And once again, that was today. Jason LaCanfora, CBS Sports. Reporting something that I think everyone around here is paying attention really already know. Multiple league and team sources saying that the 49ers very much keeping their options open at quarterback moving forward. Just one of the things that makes this strange year that much more intriguing. Jimmy Garoppolo has to prove, first of all, he has to prove that he's healthy again. Once he proves that, he has to prove through this tough stretch of matchups against the Patriots and at Seattle, against Green Bay, Saints and the Rams and the Bills, he has to prove that he's the guy going forward. I still think it's more likely that he does than doesn't, JD.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I will say as well, I mean, I think the optics are going to be a big, you know, and how this plays out are going to be, you know, an important factor. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's say Jimmy Garoppolo really struggles, and it's to the point where, you know, it's December and there's a decision to be made, and everybody at that point, because the 49ers are not going to make the playoffs and Garoppolo struggles and, you know, the season got away from him, and there are going to be these options available, Matt Ryan and or Kirk Cousins. If it does go down that path, I feel like if Kyle Shanahan chooses Kirk Cousins, you know, if the, you know, he gets the guy that maybe he's wanted all along, You know, Kirk Cousins is not going to inspire the 49er fan base whatsoever.
Nope.
In
I
fact, there's going to be a belief that Cousins is actually, on some level, a downgrade, you know, to Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, so I like Kirk Cousins would have a ton of pressure on him to come in, and I think Kyle Shanahan would have a ton of pressure on him to bring Kirk Cousins in and to have Kirk Cousins perform better and have this team win at a level as good or higher than what they were able to put out there with Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, I do think, you know, saying if you're the 49ers, hey, we're going to go get Matt Ryan for a year or two as a stopgap, and then you're going to draft somebody, and you feel like, hey, the rest of this roster coming back, you know, is, you know, the defense and getting Bosa back, hey, there's a 1 or 2 year Super Bowl window at that point for the next 2 years, and you go get Matt Ryan, who was an MVP under, you know, Kyle Shanahan, has been to a Super Bowl, you know, at that point, I think, you know, fans would be more open to that as a short-term, you know, kind of a fix. But I also think there's going to be a lot of 49er fans that would rather see them draft somebody that's, you know, going to be the starter like a lot of these other teams, like the Bengals or the Chargers or a number of other teams have done. You know, maybe they're not going to win now, but they have a quarterback that looks like he's going to be a stud, you know, in both of those particular situations. So I feel like Kyle Shanahan's going to have to be careful, because if he moves off of Jimmy Garoppolo and whoever comes in doesn't perform better than Jimmy Garoppolo did, I think it immediately takes his tenure as the guy in charge, you know, of the 49ers. It immediately becomes a fork in the road kind of a moment. And I think, as we've seen, things can go downhill fast.
I could see the 49ers, if they do decide to move off of Garoppolo, I could see them bringing in Matt Ryan and then drafting a guy that they would want to groom as their future quarterback, maybe in a second or third round. I could see Kyle Shanahan doing that rather than trading up to get one of the top, you know, Trevor Lawrence or somebody. I mean, that'd be great. I don't see the 49ers doing that. I also agree with you on Cousins. Let's just say, and I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves here, but, you know, it was reported today, Jason LaCanfora reporting that Garoppolo's future in San Francisco is still an open question, which we knew. But if they did decide to bring in Kirk Cousins, I think that would be make or break for Kyle Shanahan's San Francisco tenure. If they came up short this year and they moved off to Jimmy G and they ended up getting Kirk Cousins, and by the way, he's not cheap. He makes a lot of money and it would not be easy. It's not like the Vikings are going to just release him. I do think that would be make or break for Kyle Shanahan's San Francisco tenure, doubling down on that. If it worked out, oh, he's a genius. You're right. So many people would be so upset. If it didn't click right away, I think that might seal Kyle Shanahan's fate in San Francisco. I think he might end up being remembered more for his failures than for what he did last year. But again, I'm getting way ahead of myself. I agree with you. Cousins is not the way to go.
Yeah, and it just, you know, Bill Belichick and Jimmy in 2021, Bill Belichick and Jimmy Garoppolo, or Kyle Shanahan and Kirk Cousins? I'd take Belichick and Garoppolo.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And that's why, bottom line, I think we agree, it's still more likely that Garoppolo is the quarterback next year for the 49ers, but they're in a great position. You know, you look at so many situations around the NFL where teams are committed to guys that, you know, and there are sometimes when they're sitting there wondering, why are we committed? You think Cleveland is, you know, really happy with the commitment they've made to Baker Mayfield. The Jets got a tough decision to make with Sam Darnold. I know it's not going to be necessarily as expensive. There are, you know, situations around the league where teams are locked at the hip to their quarterbacks in some situations where maybe they wish they weren't. So it's to the credit of Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch that the 49ers have that kind of flexibility going forward. And again, one of the very interesting subplots about today's game, as Jimmy Garoppolo takes on his old coach, Bill Belichick. Now, here's what Belichick says he knows he can expect from the 49er offense today. He says they're very well balanced. He says, quote, basically, those are the two plays you see. You see runs and you see play action passes. There's a smattering of dropbacks in there and some other plays. But for the most part, you see a heavy dose of those two things. So they complement each other well, end quote. And I'm just flashing back to the last time Belichick faced an offense like this. You go back to the Super Bowl, right, against the Rams, and he shut down their running game. Of course, at that time, Todd Gurley already had not been as effective, but Belichick proved in that Super Bowl that he can shut down a running game and disrupt this type of offense. So it's certainly one of the first things he'll try today, JD, is to shut down the 49er ground game and force Jimmy G into those situations where he has to take shots downfield.
Yeah, it's twofold. It's try and take Kittle away as a safety valve, and it's to me shut down the running game, yes, but it's shut down the wide receiver runs, I think, too, as much as anything, and the short passes to the wide receivers. Basically the runs, you know, and the passes that act as if they're runs. That's the primary, I believe. And at that point, it becomes trying to make Jimmy Garoppolo throw the football with the wide receivers against the corners of the Patriots, because the Patriots do have good corners. So it's, let's see if Ayuk can get open. Let's see if Debo can get open, or Kendrick Bourne. Let's see if these guys can get open and Garoppolo can make throws. You mentioned turnovers before the top of the hour here. And, you know, the Patriots have been able to get some turnovers. And I think that's, you know, something that, you know, when you start looking at, all right, maybe the 49ers on paper are the favorite in this game, but what flips it the Patriots' way, and it wouldn't take much, you know, an interception or two would go a long way toward doing that. And I think the way that that happens is if Belichick can force Garoppolo to make some of those throws that, frankly, Garoppolo just isn't as good at. And those are also, you know, the 49er wide receivers are not as good at getting open, you know, on a lot of those routes.
Yeah, the 49ers have created only 6 turnovers all year. They may have opportunities today. Of course, it's hard to know which Patriots team is going to show up. Last week, the Patriots were terrible against Denver. But, and you made the point, you know, their practice schedule had been disrupted by all the COVID concerns. So we don't know that we're going to see that same team. But the Patriots, last 2 games, they've turned the ball over 7 times. So if Cam is still throwing the ball to the wrong team, the 49ers have a chance to come up with some of those big plays today. Another thing that Belichick knows he will see from the 49er offense, he says all the guys that they give the ball to are pretty hard to tackle. I think they led the league last year in broken tackles and were pretty high up there in yards after catch or yards after contact. Whoever has the ball is hard to tackle, starting with Kittle. But all the running backs, the receivers, they do a good job with the ball in their hands, and they get yardage on their own, end quote. So today, to a degree, may come down to tackling, right, JD? I mean, obviously, Cam is a handful. The 49ers, they try to score a touchdown on every play, so the team that tackles better today may have a leg up on winning this contest.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I mean, it's an obvious one, but it is one to key on. I mean, it really is, because, you know, if you throw a little short pass or a little flip to Debo Samuel or something to Ayuk, you know, where you're hitting him on the outside and he's got, you know, 4 blockers in front of him. You know, if you're able to get, you know, break through and get him, you know, down with a 1 or a 2 yard gain or get him for a loss, I mean, that's important. I mean, and a lot of times it's on one player to make that play, and it's the difference between a 1 or a 2 yard gain and maybe a play going for 12 or 15 yards. So I think it is paramount both ways, especially for the Patriots, frankly. If the Patriots, are going to take away what the 49ers do best.
And so we know that the Patriots will be keying on Kittle and the 49ers will be keying on Cam Newton. And they've had such a hard time with mobile quarterbacks, as we all know. And there are no disguising it today. Cam's coming at you. So it's going to be just a fascinating matchup with the 49ers trying to build on last week's win, last week after beating L.A., trying to keep it going. And speaking of beating L.A., J.D., I just wanted to, for a moment, circle back to what we saw last night. If you know any Dodger fans, as you probably know by now, they could use a hug or two after what happened to the Dodgers last night. The Dodgers they were on the verge of taking a 3-1 lead in the World Series, such as it is. Brett Phillips with a base hit to tie the game, and the 9th, Rosarena comes all the way around to score on a series of Dodger misplays, and Tampa Bay walks off the Dodgers 8-7 in a remarkable, unbelievable, amazing finish to Game 4, which turns that World Series upside down. The Dodgers so close to being close to locking it down, and now we got a tie series. They're in the thick of this thing. They got a series on their hands against the upstart Tampa Bay Rays. Incredible finish last night.
Yeah, amazing finish. I mean, an all-timer. One of those games that we're going to be talking about, you know, 34 years from now, just like you talk about what happened 34 years ago today, right, in New York with the Red Sox and the Mets and the Bill Buckner game and the ball going through his legs and that wild Saturday night at Shea Stadium where the Mets were able to tie that series at 3-3 and then win. I think there was a rainout. I think they won the following day on a Monday after a rainout.
And they were winning. Boston was winning 3-0 in Game 7.
Yeah, and so, yeah, the Mets end up coming back and winning that one and winning the World Series. That's an all-timer, point blank. I'm stunned, you know, it just at everything that happened on that play. I mean, between Chris Taylor, you know, booting the ball to, you know, Will Smith not being able to catch the throw from Muncy to a Rosarena being sent home, which I thought was the right call, but then he falls over, so he's going to be out. And then just the back and forth of Rosarena, he falls down, he gets up, he knows he's dead, he tries to, like, slide to go back to third, get in a pickle, and then he just is, he's like, oh, my God. And then he realizes in the moment, oh, God, I got to try to get home. And, you know, Kenley Jansen's not backing up the play. All kinds of bad for the Dodgers. And, you know, I do think the one saving grace for them is the fact that this did not happen, obviously, in an elimination game, but also not in a game that puts them in an elimination game. Because I think, you know, as bad as it was, as much as, you know, it does start to lead you to think, oh, my gosh, is this another, you know, one of these weird things that have happened to the Dodgers to where the Dodgers wind up not winning a World Series, and there's been so many the last 5, 6, 7 years. For me, I do think, I will say, it still sets up okay for them. A lot of pressure on Kershaw, certainly, tonight. Much different for him and all the questions surrounding his legacy to be pitching in a 2-2 versus a 3-1 series. But the Dodgers cannot get eliminated no matter what happens tonight. Even if Kershaw isn't good, even if they go down 3-2, then they get an off day, and they get the final two. And I think you have to look at Game 7 and how Walker Buehler was so dominant and think that if it goes to 7, the Dodgers are going to have an advantage. One, because they would have Walker Buehler, but two, because that would mean that they aren't just going to win, or, you know, aren't just going to lose tonight and lose Tuesday, you know, basically as a byproduct of the crazy, you know, awful loss that they sustained last night. So if they can get a win tonight, obviously they're in great shape and they're probably going to win the World Series anyway. I actually think even if they don't, you know, a lot of these wild game sixes, they're game sixes. They immediately put the team that loses in heartbreaking fashion in position to lose the series the next night with a loss. And often that's what's happened. In 11 with the Cardinals, in 86 with the Mets, the Giants losing Game 6 in 2002. You know, the next night you got to bounce back from these horrible losses to try and win or lose the World Series. The momentum, I think, carries that team that gets the win through. Even if the Rays get that bump, I still think the Dodgers have a shot.
It's a great point. I go back to 85 and the Cardinals were on the verge of closing down the Royals, and was it Dankinger made a terrible call at first base, and the Royals won that game when I think it was Orta was called safe at first and was clearly out. The Royals win that game, and then they went to the Game 7, and the Cardinals got destroyed, and they were 11-0 or something. So it's very tough to come back from these games. Confession, last night I was flipping around a little bit. I was watching the end of the Raiders of the Lost Ark. I love that movie, and it was on. It's one of those movies when it's on. I was like, oh. So I'm flipping around, and I watched the end of that movie, and then I come back for the finish of the baseball game. And I'll tell you what. The movie was more believable than what happened in the ninth inning of that game. Here's what it sounded like last night. Brett Phillips with the hit to walk off the Dodgers, followed by the reaction from stunned Dodger manager Dave Roberts.
Jansen, that is into center field. Here comes Kiermaier. Phillips has tied the game. A Rosarena coming around. Throw home. Now he stumbles. But the ball gets away.
You know, obviously I was sort of just how it kind of played out, the flare, and then just kind of seeing Mookie, you know, gather the baseball and get the ball in, then see a Rosarena stumble and, you know, expect to have him kind of caught in the middle of home and third, and then the ball gets by Will. So it's kind of a misdirection thing. So, and obviously Will can't appreciate or see that a Rosarena fell. So unfortunately, it was like that unperfect storm. Just unfortunate.
Yeah, the old sweep tag, which is very difficult for a catcher, not realizing you had plenty of time. JD, one of the things I will always remember about that moment is the reactions of everyone during the moment and afterwards, when so many people wondered, okay, what exactly happened? And you could see it on their faces. Dave Roberts, when you saw the replay, as he watched the play unfold, and you could see the horror, the realization on his face of, wait, we just lost this game. But also Brett Phillips, after he gets the hit and he's running around, I think he ended up at third base, and he starts running around in the outfield doing an airplane. And then there were trainers sitting by him and talking to him. He looked like he was hyperventilating or something, which you could understand, but it looked like he was having a hard time processing and breathing after that base hit. It was, I mean, literally bordered on the unbelievable last night.
Yeah, it's just an all-timer. I mean, it was just on so many different levels. You know, we talked in the first hour of the show about the similarities of the Francisco Cabrera base hit for the Braves in 1992 in the League Championship Series Game 7. They were down a run. It wound up being a two-run single. And, you know, Cabrera won it, and Barry Bonds, it was his last play with the Pirates, and the throw home, and Sid Bream, not the fastest guy in the world, you know, beating out the throw to the plate. But Cabrera was literally the last man on the Braves bench that night. You know, not a great hitter, not somebody that had had a lot of at-bats, and he was able to come through with the single. And I couldn't help but think of Brett Phillips being in a similar situation where he was in the game to run and then had to take his at-bat. I mean, so often when that happens, it winds up hurting the team in the Rays' position. But last night, Phillips was able to come through on a 1-2 count against Kenley Jansen.
Yeah, and the first two strikes that Jansen got across were, one was right on the inside corner, up and in, and I think the second one, if I'm not mistaken, right in the outside corner down at the knees. Like, those were unhittable. This guy is so overmatched to begin with. And Phillips, when he came through, as I mentioned earlier, I literally just out loud said, he did it. And I didn't know if they were going to win, but just that he got a hit in that situation was incredible. By the way, speaking of that Sid Bream play, have you ever heard Andy Van Slyke's version of what happened right before Cabrera got that hit? Have you heard him explain what happened, JD?
I think I have, but I don't recall exactly. So you can refresh my memory on that.
Okay, well, you know, if the Pirates, if they record an out there, they win, right? So I mean, everything's hanging in the balance. Van Slyke said, he's a center fielder, he says right before the fateful pitch, he motioned to Barry to move in, And he says, Barry, I think Barry gave him the finger. So he's like, okay. And then of course, there's a base hit. Now, I've seen that a number of times. You know, the throw wasn't great. It wasn't awful. And Barry actually made a nice play to get to the ball, but it wasn't a great throw in baseball history made there as the Braves move on. But it is amazing how we remember these things. And without question, that one last night is one that baseball fans will never forget. And I know it's really tough on Dodger fans unless they come back and win. But, you know, baseball fans deserve something like that, JD. This year has been so rough for everyone. But I'm glad that baseball fans have something we can always remember out of this weird, weird COVID World Series year.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, just to, and all. And look, now this series is set up to be, you know, a classic. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, it could be. And I mean, get that game four, now it's on that track. You know, if this thing goes seven, and maybe six or seven is one of the great games, then the entire series could go down as, you know, definitely one of the strangest. But if this one winds up being a classic, you know, maybe it could be a positive memory to come out of what's been a lost year.
Absolutely. Yeah, Brett Phillips of all people, the last man on the roster of the underdog team. I was reminded of Yukon Cornelius and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. How do you like that? Even among misfits, you're misfits. And he got the big hit. Coming up, we're going to be crunching some eye-popping pregame numbers. Whitey and JD getting ready for the 49ers and the Patriots, and of course the kickoff show coming up, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Hope you're having a great Sunday, getting you ready for the 49ers and the Patriots. Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. By the way, if you want to win a $250 gift card to Snake River Farms, tweet us at 957 The Game using the hashtag Elevate Your Tailgate with a photo of your home tailgate to be entered to win a $250 gift card from Snake River Farms. We're looking for the best tailgate picks as we head into week 7 here of the NFL season. Entrance must include the hashtag Elevate Your Tailgate and mention at 957 The Game in their tweet for the entry to be counted. Snake River Farms, the pioneer of American Wagyu beef. We're going to crunch some pregame numbers for you here in just a second. JD, if I may, I have one more thing for you on Brett Phillips. Can I share one more thing with you on Brett Phillips, the hero? Okay. Have you ever heard him laugh?
I did last night, but yeah, but okay. No, but not yeah. Before then.
All right, to anyone, you know, Brett Phillips, the hero last night, for anyone who's never heard him laugh, this is Brett Phillips. And before last night, this is really what he was known for. Here's Brett Phillips, what it sounds like when he laughs. Kind of a honking, kind of more of a goose-like laugh. Yeah, it's a very strange laugh. That's what he was known for until last night. But isn't that great when you see an underdog like that come through, Brett Phillips, last night for the Tampa Bay Rays? JD, I know we may get to the actives. We may have an update on that here before we're done, getting ready for the kickoff show. I wanted to throw some numbers at you, some stats in regards to the game today. And if you could, and I'll play along with you here, let us know whether you think these are significant, things to keep in mind, or, you know, sometimes these numbers are nonsense. Would you be up for some of that here as we crunch some numbers down the stretch?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Some of these we have mentioned already. For example, Bill Belichick, 7-1 against quarterbacks that he drafted or started at some point. To me, that's interesting. We know he's an excellent defensive coach. To me, it's maybe a little overblown. I think Belichick, he has a winning record against most quarterbacks he coaches, but is that something to be concerned with today as a 49er fan, the fact that Belichick 7-1 against quarterbacks that he drafted or started at some point, and of course, he's facing Garoppolo today, whom he drafted?
I think it's actually a big deal, even though the Patriots have been, you know, among the best teams, if not the best team in the NFL in a lot of those, you know, instances. So, of course, you know, they're going to win a lot in those games, regardless of whether that quarterback plays well going up against a Belichick defense. But I do feel like it's important in this specific matchup, just based on, you know, the fact that there's so much, you know, scrutiny surrounding Jimmy Garoppolo and, you know, just the nature of the trade and how Belichick traded him to the 49ers. And, you know, at times Jimmy looks like he's a bona fide franchise quarterback. At other times you kind of wonder. I just feel like Belichick, knowing the intricacies of what Garoppolo can do well, what coverages maybe he might struggle with, I think that gives Belichick a legit advantage in the game today.
I know that Jimmy Garoppolo is still presumably recovering from his high ankle sprain. I know that the offensive line, they haven't been great at pass blocking. So I know it's really important for him to get the ball out quickly. And we have some numbers on that, as a matter of fact. But JD, when the 49ers drafted Ayuk, I allowed myself to dream of a day, at least a day, when we might see Garoppolo go up top and connect on a deep ball to Ayuk. Is that something that you think we still need to see this year, perhaps as soon as today, from Jimmy Garoppolo?
At some point, we're going to have to see it. They just haven't taken many shots, like you're mm-hmm. saying. I mean, the one that I keep waiting for Ayuk, and I'm going to take it down a different path, I keep waiting for Ayuk to catch a slant or just a quick little hitter and take it to the house. I know, mm-hmm. I think I mentioned that we were on a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And that was the night where he had the catch and run against the Eagles, you know, where he leaped over the defender and all of that. I'm still waiting for him, you know, in a more traditional, you know, pass route to catch one and just, oh, my goodness, he turned on the jets and he's gone. So I think we may be more apt to see that before we see the deep ball. But I think either would be a welcome sight.
Yeah, tough to complete the deep ball today because New England, they're not having a great year, but their secondary is excellent. Whitey and JD here crunching some numbers. Are these things to keep in mind today or numbers that you can just forget about? Jimmy Garoppolo, third in yards per attempt in 2019, JD. 2019, Jimmy Garoppolo, third in yards per attempt at 8.4. So far this year, 18th at 7.4. Is that something to keep in mind today? To me, that's just merely a reflection of the fact that, wow, he's really been hurt.
Yeah, I'm out on that one. I don't think that one means nearly as much. It's does Kyle Shanahan trust Jimmy Garoppolo to throw the ball down the field when he feels like they need to? And even in the Miami game, and there were a couple of bad interceptions in that game, even in the Miami game, that game got to the point where it was like, oh my goodness, the 49ers are getting crushed, and they got to throw it. And it didn't work out well, and Garoppolo, like you said, you know, he was injured and all of that, but he wasn't afraid to do it. So I think at some point, you know, he'll be healthier and they'll have to do it, and I think those yards per attempt will increase. So I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. Also, yards per attempt, when it comes to a guy like Garoppolo, they can really be misleading anyway. When you look at what he did last week where, you know, he just flips the ball up in the air and, you know, Deebo Samuel comes and grabs it out of the air and then, oh, it's a forward pass. So, you know, 18 yards. Well, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful figuring out how much those numbers mean anyway with the 49er offense. New England, we touched on this one I know earlier. New England has lost 7 turnovers over the last 2 games. The 49ers have forced only 6 turnovers all year. I know last week I thought turnovers could be huge in the game, so who knows what's going to happen. But to me, that's a potentially real key to this game today, which team wins the turnover battle and whether either team is able to force the other team into some bad turnovers.
Yeah, I think it's going to continue to be a key for the 49ers in every single game that they don't turn the ball over on offense, because I just feel like their defense is not going to take the ball away like we're used to seeing. And the one with, you know, Verrett last week was a crucial play, but we're just not seeing, you know, the physicality and the dominant pass rush, you know, leading to fumbles, leading to quick, bad throws by quarterbacks that can be picked off. Like, we're just not seeing the turnovers that come from just the sheer brute force of a dominant defense. I think the 49ers have a solid defense, but it's not a dominant defense. So I think just like we're not going to see a lot of quarterback pressure like we are used to seeing, I think we're also, you know, going to see fewer turnovers, frankly. And that means that the 49ers, in turn, because they're not going to be getting as many turnovers that are momentum-changing plays, they have to be extra careful and diligent with their ball security to where they're not then flipping the script and giving the other team an extra possession.
It's interesting now. We have had enough of the season where we're seeing some of the better defenses around the league, some of the truly excellent defenses start to assert themselves a little bit. You know,
Pittsburgh,
week to week, it's so hard. Pittsburgh, I would say Tampa Bay. I mean, in the NFC, the Bears. Arizona has some, their points against is impressive, but I still don't put them in that category. I think the Rams, I know last week wasn't a great week for them, but I think the Rams are one of those teams. The Saints, it's going to be interesting to see how much the 49ers week to week can count on their defense. There's two things that a truly excellent defense has to do, and it's probably not fair to expect the 49ers to be an excellent defense this year, given the injuries. But the two things an excellent defense, game-changing defense, has to do, you have to be able to sack the other team's quarterback, disrupt their offense that way, and you also have to come up with turnovers. And right now the 49ers really struggle in both of those areas, but that's primarily because of all the injuries.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I just don't think that's going to get better, frankly. I mean, do you think it has the potential to get better? Like, I actually would just take, at this point, if I were the 49ers, you know, I would take the defense overall to this point being what they've been, because mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to get more pass rush. To me, maybe you get Sherman back. You know, that would be nice. You know, maybe you get D4 back. That helps you a little bit. I don't even think you can count on that at this point, really. But if Verrett can stay healthy and be as good as he's been, if Mosley can be solid, if you can get your safeties back, if, you know, I feel like the defense is not a bad defense. If they can be what they've been and the 49ers can get the offense in a little bit more of a consistent rhythm, I do think there's enough on both sides to where you can win football games. If they can't get the offense rolling in conjunction with the defense, I just don't think the defense can carry the 49ers like we saw them do last year. I think they set themselves up for games kind of like last week where, you know, the 49ers were in control of the game, but it still felt like, you know, 1-3 and out and one touchdown, and then it was going to be in a really vulnerable spot where maybe the defense, because of how the 49ers played on offense in the second half, maybe the defense is tired and can get picked apart by some of the better quarterbacks. It last week led me to think, damn, it's a good thing they weren't playing the Packers, because if they had kind of played that game against the Packers, and we've seen this so many times from Aaron Rodgers where he'll just look dead, and then it's like, boom, touchdown, and then they get a stop, and it's boom, touchdown. All of a sudden, it's a really close game, and you're kind of hanging on for dear life down the stretch. And I felt like the 49ers really benefited from the fact that they were not playing a quarterback that was just going to kind of will his team back into the game, because if they had been, it may have been somewhat of a similar finish to what happened in that Arizona game where it was just a tired defense getting picked apart.
Yeah, one of the things that we've seen a couple times, Arizona and last week a little bit in the second half, we've seen teams go no huddle against the 49ers, and they've had some success with it. I'm a little surprised we haven't seen more of that against the 49er defense. I agree with you. I think to this point, the 49ers have to be pretty satisfied with what they've gotten defensively, given the injuries. I think that ultimately the defense is going to, you know, it's going to come far short of what they got from last year's defense for obvious reasons. I suspect that for a lot of fans, Robert Saleh is going to come under fire again at some point if this season ends badly, especially if, you know, if they give up a lot of points in the season-ending loss, which could happen. I don't think that's necessarily going to be fair. You remember how down people were on him until they got better players defensively. Then all of a sudden, he's a potential head coaching candidate. And then again this year, I think already you start to hear about, oh, Saleh, what's Saleh doing? So I would suspect he's going to come under fire in some corners unfairly. One more thing to keep an eye on here, talking about some of the bad games the 49ers have had and other teams defensively. You know that Miami, their coach Brian Flores, is a Belichick disciple. So I think given the success Miami had across the board against the 49ers, we're going to see some similar tactics today, especially when it comes to, you know, they call them disguised bear fronts. I think we're going to see Belichick, not that he's copying Flores, it's the other way around, but I think in some ways New England would love for that Miami game to be a blueprint for what they try to accomplish against the 49ers today defensively.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. But I also think, you know, getting ahead, you know, Miami threw that game out of whack based on their ability to get ahead and pick on Brian Allen. And that's the one game, obviously, where the 49ers defense was bad. But that's almost a wash because they were bad because Brian Allen was so bad.
I got another one here as we crunch some numbers. This is huge. It's a matter, really, the debate is how huge is it? And you just touched on it. Passer rating allowed, all NFL defenders, okay? Passer rating allowed, all NFL defenders. Number one, at 14.6 passer rating allowed, Jason Verrett. Jason Verrett, who's been by far the most, a lot of stories coming out of the 49ers in their play this year, but the most positive, without question, has been the incredible career turnaround of Jason Verrett. Number one among all NFL defenders in passer rating allowed, JD. Wow.
Yeah, that's important. That's massive, and that's important, and I think it's going to need to continue, you know, at least along, you know, where he's, you know, near the top, maybe not necessarily at the top, because I think, you know, we've talked a lot about, hey, it's a different defense and the pass rush is going to be different. The one area where it looks like the 49ers actually could be pretty good is they're going to be a better coverage team. So, you know, to the point about Robert Saleh, he may have to adjust, you know, the way the 49ers are going to go about doing things, and, you know, this team, you know, some teams are dominant, you know, or solid defensively because of their rushers. Others, it's because of their secondary. And maybe the 49ers this year are going to have to lean a little bit more on their secondary in the defense and play more coverage that will allow, you know, for a greater strength of this year's team.
Yeah, that's a great point, especially because today's opponent, New England, has been a team that really has gotten it done through coverage, a great, great coverage secondary. A couple more here as we crunch some numbers here. JD and I heading down the home stretch here. I know we talked about this earlier. This is one every week, right, with the 49ers. ESPN pointing out the 49ers 19-4 in the regular season and postseason since Shanahan was hired when they've run the ball 30 times or more. 19-4. They're 12-0 in the circumstances, that circumstance, since the start of the 2019 season. We touched on this, JD. Obviously, it's not cause and effect, but it helps you understand the importance, how important it is for the 49ers. If they're going to have any success, they have to be able to run the football.
If they can run it 30 times today, I guarantee you they'll win.
Guarantee?
I guarantee if they run the ball 30 times today, they'll beat the Patriots, because it'll mean that they're having a great amount of success with it. It'll mean that they're not, you know, behind by 10 to 14 points. It will mean, you know, in all likelihood, there hasn't been a catastrophic turnover that flipped the game to where they have to go away from the run. If they run the ball 30 times today, I know it's not all-encompassing every single week. Obviously, it's a goal, it's a target. But I'm going to say for today's game, if the 49ers can run it 30 times, they will beat the Patriots.
Wow. The other side of that coin, and The Athletic and Tim Kawakami broke this down. The 49ers in the Shanahan era since the start of the 2017 season, 0-4 when they run the ball fewer than 20 times. And when they run it fewer than 25 times, including the postseason, the 49ers 2-17 again. And I know people understand this. It's not just a matter of, okay, well, our first 30 players are going to run the ball and then we're going to win. No, but isn't that staggering when they run it fewer than 25 times, 2-17, which just underscores the importance of being able to run to set up the play action, which allows you to take your shots down the field. Kyle Shanahan's offense is built entirely on the ability to run the football.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. You got to run it to set everything else up, and if you can't do it, or you wind up in game situations to where you choose not to do it, it's twofold, mm-hmm. right? It's the fact that, you know, do you wind up behind in the game? Do you wind up, you know, feeling you need to throw to open up the run? It just depends on how you get to that point. Right, it's not just that you're not even having success with it. Sometimes you are having success with it, but you go away from it because of a particular matchup, or because maybe your defense, you know, gives up, you know, some points, and you feel like you have to get those points back fast. Some of it is discipline, and I think that's the biggest, you know, component to when Kyle Shanahan talks about, you know, the desire to run it that much, 30 times specifically. It's the fact that it tells you, it's a tell that the game is being played on your terms and not on your opponent's terms. And I think that's where it translates to victory.
All right. JD and I agree. The 49ers, if they can get to 5-5 heading into the break, week 11 is the break for them. They can get it in there at 5-5 with presumably more players returning before they go play the Rams on November 29th? Anyway, week 12 29th. Matchup there. Yeah, thank you. Then they're in reasonable shape. They would appear to be in reasonable shape and making a run to the postseason there. And so with New England coming up here, the struggling Patriots, then at Seattle, then Green Bay, short week after the Seattle game, then at New Orleans. Today's game appears to be one that you really would like to have. That said, JD, I know that said, typically this point of the show, we make some predictions. I just feel like I need to sit out the prediction portion of our discussion here because I cannot get a handle on this 49er team. So the floor is yours if you are bold enough to make any kind of prediction. Now, I will admit, yesterday I was on with Coz, and I think I had the 49ers winning 24-13, something like that. So I did, I'm not sure how confident I am in that, but if you have any predictions that you are bold enough to make at this time, I invite you to do so, sir, at your own risk.
Yeah, I don't feel great about predictions. I had the 49ers. I'm going back through here. Last week was game six. So the first five games of the year, I picked the 49ers to win all of them.
Yeah.
Of course, they were 2-3. And then last week was the first week that I didn't pick them to win. I'm kind of in that same boat. So hard to figure out among all of these games. I kind of like the 49ers today. And again, maybe I'm too much of a prisoner of the moment. I just think if you take Belichick out of it, I feel like the 49ers are by far the better team. And, you know, even with the guys that they're playing right now, even without Mostert, even, you know, I just feel like you take Belichick out of it, the 49ers are the right side of the game. You factor Belichick in, I still think the 49ers maybe are in, you know, greater lockstep than the Patriots are, still, you know, trying to bounce back from some of their issues. I don't really worry about the old stats as far as, well, the Patriots haven't been this bad since, you know, blank or blank, because, I mean, that's all basically the Brady era, which is no more. So, you know, I don't really think that matters as much. The Patriots are just an ordinary team. There isn't going to be fans. I think, you know, that's favored the road teams, in my estimation. So I think the 49ers are going to win this game. I think it's, when it's all said and done, 23-16, 23-17, something like that. I think I'm going to say 23-16 49ers.
All right, that scares me because we're very close, because as I said, I was 24-13. I think the 49ers, there's a good chance they will be able to run the ball, even though Belichick is hell-bent to stop it. And when he's determined to stop something, you know, typically he stops it. But as I mentioned earlier, New England will load the box, of course, but they're kind of smallish up front, and I like that matchup from the 49ers standpoint. I think Kittle will be difficult to take away because the 49ers use him so many different ways. And if they do take him out of the passing game, I still think he's going to be able to get things done in the running game to set up other receivers. And I think if you were going to play a game without either of your starting safeties, which typically you don't like to do at this level, I think this would be the team you would want to play, the New England Patriots, who have thrown for more than 200 yards only once so far this year. So I'm with you. I'm also with you in that I have not been very accurate this year, but I think this is a game that sets up in the 49ers' favor at a time when they really need another game to set up in their favor, JD.
Yeah, and look, if they can get the win, they're in great shape. If you're 4-3 and then it takes a little bit of pressure off of that Seattle game, of course you're going to go and try to win it, but even if you don't, you're 4-4, and you've got that Packers game in front of you, which, again, going to be no picnic, but you got an opportunity to win that game maybe at home and get to 5-4 before you go to New Orleans. Like, the path toward getting to at least 5-5 at the bye, and by the way, the Saints have struggled with Carolina a little bit today. They are leading, but the Saints look more vulnerable and beatable, although the Packers have been dominant, up 21-0 at halftime. So, yeah, today is the path toward still remaining in that playoff contention and conversation.
Hey, we've talked a lot about Antonio Brown. There are rumblings that New Orleans may be fielding offers for Michael Thomas, who they're unhappy with because he punched a teammate. If you're the 49ers, if you win this game, maybe you win next week, are you maybe going to think about being a big-name buyer at the deadline, JD?
He's that good. He's that good where I'd consider it. But, no, I don't think the 49ers are going to go down that route.
John Dickinson, thank you very much. I always appreciate working with you. Appreciate it, Sterling. Great job. Sam, great job. Thank you for listening. Coming up next, the kickoff show, Bonte and Shasky on 95.7 The Game.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.